With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All right. Well, hello, everyone. My name is Billy Dees. Welcome to the podcast. If you have never checked out our program before, we are primarily a commentary and an interview podcast. Today, we are going to be doing commentary. And for that, I have a guest host, and he is someone who checks in with us every so often. Jack Casey is on the studio line. How are you doing, Jack?
Good, man. It's been a while. How you been?
I've been okay. But anyway, what are we going to be talking about today? We're going to go, since it's such a big story, I don't feel that we can ignore it, and that would be what's happening right now in Ukraine. And also, additionally to that, we will be talking about what's going on in Canada and possibly some certain parts of the United States with these trucker protests. And of course, this is stemming from the vaccines and the mask mandates and all that other stuff. And we'll get into that in just a little bit. But first of all, obviously, the Ukraine right now is a big topic. Russia, under the command of Vladimir Putin, has invaded the area called the Ukraine. As we speak, they're talking about certain talks tomorrow. I don't know exactly what that means. I don't know if that involves a ceasefire. I would guess not. And if I was in the Ukraine, I would probably not agree to a ceasefire, quite frankly, because what's happening right now, from what we've been able to gather, is the invasion has come to somewhat of a siege. The roll-in that was expected by Russia did not go as planned. They're hitting a lot of resistance. And typically, it seems like such an honorable thing to do. Well, let's have a ceasefire and let's, you know, talk and let's negotiate. But what that often means is ceasefire means reload. And if you have the upper hand in a situation, when you agree to a ceasefire, you give the enemy a chance to refortify their positions, reestablish their supply lines, and all of a sudden the talks break down, as often happens, and the next thing you know, you're up against an enemy that's now twice as strong. So I'm not exactly sure how that's going to go. The big news of today, in addition to all of the violence, is that Vladimir Putin let the word nuclear come out of his mouth in regards to raising what he calls a nuclear alert in terms of his defenses. And a lot of the analysts that I've listened to today seem to feel that this was, you know, a scare tactic, especially for the United States. However, you can't rule out anything. And what you can't rule out as well is some low-grade nuclear weapon being used as a battlefield weapon. Okay, there's some very low-grade nuclear missiles and things that can be used in certain regions. We often typically regard a nuclear explosion as some cataclysmic thing that's going to wipe out a whole city or a whole state, and they can be used in much smaller applications. So that's probably one of the more bigger concerns for people in the security business and our national security business, but you can't rule out anything. So with that being said, let me bring in Jack here. What are your impressions of what you've heard so far?
Well, I mean, one nuclear application, actually, that a lot of people don't know about is depleted uranium rounds, which are used as anti-tank, and because they can punch through metal,
yeah.
Which I wouldn't be surprised if those are being used at this point, because we used them in Iraq back during that campaign. I don't think he's going to actually nuke anybody. Everybody's kind of acting like skulls or the sky is falling. I think as well, it's a scare tactic. He's just kind of putting it out there. But it really seems like he's backed in the corner because this invasion did not go how he thought it would. The resistance from the Ukraine has been kind of surprising. I thought that Russia would just kind of roll in and take over. But
yeah,
they seem to be holding their own. One unfortunate thing is that there have been a lot of civilians targeted, which I've been seeing a lot of videos of the past few days. And the saddest part about the whole thing is that this is just people like you and me who just want to live their lives and, you know, be left alone. And now they've got this foreign aggressor coming in and just destroying their lives. And that's on both sides too. I mean, the Russian people are going to suffer as well. Yeah. And, I think one of the reasons that Putin's seems more and more backed into a corner is that he's messing with Russia's economy and the oligarchs in Russia. He's messing with their money. And in a society like theirs, where you have a kind of like what you would call a tyrant, once he starts to lose his powerful friends, then it starts to look more and more like he's being deposed. I've seen some people say that Ukraine doesn't necessarily have to defeat the Russian army. They just have to outlast Putin. So this is one of the first modern wars we've seen using, you know, our level of communications technology and our, you know, and modern, you know, modern warfare. And since a lot of people across the world are seeing the actual horrors of this war in real time, I feel like that's where a lot more of the pushback too is coming against Russia from the rest of the world. So like these sanctions they're putting on them are no joke. And apparently starting today, all of the, they have no real airspace pretty much anywhere because the EU shut them off. Canada just announced that they're banned from Canadian airspace. So it'll be interesting to see if those have an impact as well.
Yeah, I've heard that the sanctions are real. Typically in terms of warfare, even strict sanctions really don't impede that much. But one of the things that is kind of impressive, for lack of a better term, is the SWIFT banking system, which has been frozen in regard to Russia. And for those who may not know, I'm not an expert on this either, but what the SWIFT system is it allows international banks to be able to transfer money securely. Yep. Okay. And this is something that has been held back for Russia. One of the concerns, and I'll let you speak about this, is that so many of the regions around the Ukraine are NATO members. And of course, there's an agreement in NATO that if you fire upon one, it's like firing upon all of them. So one of the concerns has been if by chance somebody would get caught in the crosshairs, one of our allies would get caught in the crosshairs, how far could this escalate? It is conceivable that, you know, an American plane or something else could be shot at. And what would happen then? And this is one of the big concerns right now for a lot of people in the, you know, international security parts of government, because that's a tough one. It's generally presumed by a lot of people that, you know, a war between the United States and Russia couldn't happen. But I don't know that I would go so far as to take a lot of comfort in that. I'd have to say it's unlikely, but I wouldn't rule it out. What is your opinion about? Yeah.
Well, I mean, they attack NATO.
What's your opinion?
Attack us, and we have our troops out there too, kind of sitting on standby. And I think everybody's kind of nervous on both sides. But yeah, if they were to accidentally hit, say, Poland, you know, where a lot of the refugees are going, and Russia's not really seemed to be above, you know, targeting civilians and refugees. I would think that there would be the local countries first that would probably take action. but it could turn into a really ugly all-out shooting war. And I'm really hoping that we can avoid that. They did retake the second largest city in the Ukraine today, which is good news. So it's just, I think it's just a matter of how far Putin is willing to take it before he, you know, sees his losses become too great for it to be worth it anymore. From what I've read, one of the main motivations for taking the Ukraine is he wants to create, you know, the extra buffer between him and NATO. And it's just if he completely roasts the you know, the Ukraine, then he loses all the farmland and everything else that would be beneficial about having the territory in the first place. So it doesn't really seem to make sense to me that he would do something dirty like drop a nuke or any of that, because, I mean, why would you want to roll over a crater? I don't know. It's interesting times, man. Like, nobody knows where this is going to go or what's going to happen tomorrow. It is kind of scary. And you see a lot of people in our country commentating, you know, oh, we would do this, we would do that. But, I mean, we haven't had a shooting war or an invasion or any of that in anybody's living memory. So, honestly, we don't know what it's like.
The
closest we've been to it was the Bosnian conflict back in the 90s. And I mean, that was quite a disaster. So it's it'll be interesting to sit back and watch. But as I said, I think a lot of the fears about nukes being dropped and everything, I don't think it's going to happen. He would be decimated as well, and it doesn't benefit anybody. So I'd be interested to see if his oligarchs do stop him from any further action. But one thing I do want to say is the president of the Ukraine, he is a stand-up guy. I actually kind of admire him. Yeah. I mean, he's down on the front lines with his troops, you know, shooting as well. He's not running away like I would expect a lot of leaders to do. I mean, can you imagine our Congress, like, any of our congressmen or congresswomen joining the front lines to shoot back at Canada if they invaded, you know? But
it wouldn't happen.
I don't believe so. But the sanctions thing too is that it hurts the civilians in Russia as well. I've been seeing reports of money runs, like the banks saying, you know, not to do it, kind of like back in, you know, the beginning of the Great Depression here in the United States. So I hope that, and the Russian people aren't their government. So it hurts as much just to see them suffer as well over things they can't control. So we'll see.
Well, in regard to that president, he's, I believe his name is Zelensky. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. He's quite the, you know, the dynamic character, but you got to keep in mind that people in that region are very battle hardened. The people in the United States are not.
No.
I mean, there's people in that region who grew up in the wake of the Holocaust.
Yep.
Okay. And, you know, and it just doesn't mean 1945, but the wake of the Holocaust was, you know, through the 1950s and the 1960s, you know, people missing, families broken up and all these other things. And there's a lot of people in that area have very vivid memories of that.
Well, there was a genocide when you
go down.
So.
Yeah. And of course, all the other conflicts that have happened there. And quite frankly, forgive me for saying this, but this is something I know that 9/11 is probably the most closest thing that Americans have to feeling, you know, penetrated, so to speak, our borders being, breached. But, you know, for the most part, Americans have had it very, very well when it comes to stuff like this. I mean, you pretty much have to go back to the War of 1812 to when a foreign power actually, you know, was on the continental United States to any great degree. You know, the war with Mexico, we were pretty much the aggressor in that. You know, that was New Mexico, Arizona, California. So, and of course, the Civil War, we did that to ourselves. But through World War II, even, you know, there was times when people were nervous, people were worried about it. There was some fighting that was kept away from the American public right off the shore in the Atlantic Ocean, that they managed to keep that quiet so that the people wouldn't be afraid. But for the most part, we haven't had armies roaming around the country here, you know, from other places. And, you know, if you could imagine, if you feel that there are supply shortages now, if you can imagine what 9/11 was on the order of the threat of that happening, buildings falling in various cities on any given day. If you can imagine going outside and checking the sky for any streaks across the sky that don't look right. You know, that's something that, quite frankly, Americans don't have the brain power to imagine it.
No.
Exactly.
It's fun to watch those gun grabber types, too, who are like, oh, well, you know, if the Ruskies invaded, I'd just grab my AK and go out with the boys and shoot me some Ruskies. It's like, no, you wouldn't. Yeah. You'd hide in your basement, and then you get shot or your house would get blown up. Like, you have no...
Yeah.
That's been kind of entertaining to watch, too, is everybody saying, oh, well, you know, Americans are tough. We'll take them down. Like, we don't have experience with any of that. I mean, I don't know how to fly a plane. No. That doesn't mean if the plane was crashing, I'd be able to jump in the pilot's seat and, you know, land us safely at LAX.
Exactly.
So.
Yeah. Warfare is a completely different thing. I know it's kind of cool to go out with your little paintballs and play, you know, war out in the afternoon, and then on your way home, stop at Applebee's and you know, it's war just isn't like that.
Yeah. To be fair, paintball is really fun. Talking about it.
Oh yeah, it's fun, but it doesn't mean you have war experience. No. And it's, you know, it's one of those things where your infrastructure is destroyed, your supplies are destroyed, the will of your country is beaten down. You live, you know, scanning the skies as to what's going to fall on you and blow up next. It's not just a matter of playing shoot 'em up.
Oh, can you imagine if another country took out our internet alone? I mean, Facebook was down for like four hours a couple months ago, and everybody lost their minds. Like, people were calling 911 about it.
I mean, a cyber attack is something, quite frankly, that is probably more in the realm of possibility before I would say a nuclear one.
Right.
And these are all things that, to any great degree, to the level of war, you know, we're not talking about little isolated things, but to the level of war, real war, this is something that Americans have not experienced. It's something that I don't feel that we should or want to, but we have to be careful when we kick in the door in these places and say we're going to get involved. And I kind of talk out of both sides of my mouth on this, because on the one hand, you could very easily make the case that Vladimir Putin, for example, feels encroached upon by NATO. A lot of people have been saying that NATO became irrelevant when the old Soviet Union came apart. So why did we keep it? And he does feel, like you say, he's being boxed into a corner by NATO countries. And, you know, the land discrepancies and what's been going on there has been going on a long time. So it's really easy to sit back and say, we don't want to put ground troops there. And nobody wants that. Nobody wants more war. I can't imagine that.
No.
By the same token, you know, there's a big movement in our own government right now in terms of what you might call isolationism. And I understand that, but you have to be really careful. You know, we've had this happen in the Republic of Georgia, I believe it's referred to. We've had it happen in Chechnya now, and now it's happening in the Ukraine. So, you know, how many times does this have to happen? You know, the next thing you know, it's D-Day. you have to walk a line here between not being the police of the world, which I don't believe we should be. But by the same token, you can't keep backing up and letting bullies take more and more area. There's a balance there that's very hard to navigate. Would you agree with that?
Oh, I've always been against this being the total world police. And in the past, at least 2 years, we've been kind of stepping back on that. And that's kind of made me happy.
Yeah.
Because I mean, it gets to a point where if you don't let, you know, countries and people in those countries kind of deal with their own problems, then you're really just teaching them learned helplessness. Like, you know, oh, if the neighbor comes over and, you know, lets his dog crap in my lawn and doesn't pick it up, and then, you know, somebody else comes and picks it up for me, then I don't have to learn how to you know, go out and negotiate with them, or I don't have to learn how to, you know, do my own yard work.
Sure.
And when you get that learned helplessness, it just makes them an even softer target for another aggressor to come in. And it's actually kind of lucky, too, that the Ukrainians are as battle hardened and all that as you know, they are. Because, you know, say if someplace, you know, more posh, like, say, Britain or you know, another country like that, or even us got invaded, it would be a much different story, because we don't, Britain and we don't have the civilians who can fire a gun straight, who are capable of, you know, ending other people's lives for the most part. So, but the learned helplessness thing doesn't help either.
Well, the other thing that you have to be worried about in a situation, as far as staying out of it, the other thing that you have to be worried about is, like, for example, with our Civil War, one of the things that Lincoln was very concerned about was that if it went on too long, other people were going to get involved. Other countries were going to get involved. Mm-hmm. And this happened in Syria. Okay. Syria, that area just was unstable for so long. Now you got a bunch of bad actors in there, all whole groups of them. Okay. Mm-hmm. And this is a situation here where exactly the same thing can happen when you allow a situation like this to fester, very much like an infection, and say, I'm not going to get involved in it, I'm going to let it replay itself out. It can spread. And the next thing you know, now you have a much bigger infection that you can't ignore. So all of these are things, you know, the balance between when to get involved and when to stay out is a very difficult one to navigate. And of course, hindsight is always 20/20. And that's what I would say for any president in sitting in those shoes. It's a very difficult thing in terms of how history is going to judge your actions, because things can go certain ways based on the slightest movement. And it's really a chess game in a lot of different ways. And what I would hear again, my concern would be that this is going to widen. Other actors are going to get involved in this. And it can be very hard to contain, you know, and then it can spread. Now, in regard to, you know, I don't know that a nuclear conflict with Russia is likely. Not impossible, but I wouldn't say that.
Right.
What I would say is that for us to get involved on the ground against Russia would be very difficult, very, very difficult. It would take an army of a very large magnitude. And that's something you have to weigh against this. We have some advantages from in regard to our position with Russia worldwide, in that we are more of a world player. For example, if we got involved in a conflict with Russia at the southern tip of Africa or something, we would have a clear advantage. OK, because we have that world reach. Russia doesn't have that. But in that region, they have an army that we do not want. That is not something that we want to go up against. So we have to play our cards very carefully in terms of how this is managed. The best I can say about this, and then I'll turn it over to you to close it up on your end, is the next few days, next few weeks are going to be very critical. And it's a very dangerous time for the world and for this region. Obviously, there's death happening in the Ukraine by people who just want to live their lives. And I also feel, to a certain degree, for the Russian troops, many of whom are not particularly thrilled about having to fire upon who they consider their brothers or sisters to be. Yep. You know, this would be like if Pennsylvania, you know, for one reason or another, was no longer a part of the United States, and then we invaded it, we'd be shooting upon people that we know. Okay. So this is a very uncomfortable situation for everybody involved. And of course, war is always ugly. But the best we can do is hope that there is a resolution to this soon, and the amount of suffering on both sides. And from what I understand, public support in Russia for this has been, you know, relatively small as well. There's been a lot of protests in Russia. It's hard to gauge that because access is limited there. But for the most part, as far as the international news sources are saying, there's been a lot of protests and a lot of people who are not happy in Russia with this whole movement. So we have to be very careful not to blame the Russian people or the Russian troops. There's a lot of victims here all over the place. Mm-hmm. I'll let you wrap up this subject and then we'll move on. But do you have any final words on the Ukraine situation?
Well, first of all, I mean, firing at Pennsylvania, well, I mean, there are Steelers fans there and we can't really let that aggression stand. Also, I'm hoping it works out to where Putin realizes that it's not going to end well for him and he backs down and, you know, we can kind of go back to coldly looking over the fence at each other, you know. But my heart does go out to the Ukrainian people and the average Joes like you and me who, as I said, just want to be left alone and, you know, play with their kids and go to work and do all those things. And it really has been kind of heartbreaking reading posts from people who are out in the Ukraine over the past couple weeks, you know, living that constant fear of not knowing if you're going to have a home tomorrow or a family or food.
Exactly. Sure.
To be able to go online and, you know, play Tarkov with your friends or any of that. But I kind of hope that the United States keeps kind of how they did it during World War One, where they just kind of started out as, like, you know, the arms dealers, you know, giving supplies and staying out of it, you know, as long as we can. I hope everything works out for everybody. I guess it'll be an interesting thing to keep tabs on. Yeah. That's for sure.
I hope that Vladimir Putin would have the wherewithal to realize that he miscalculated on this. I believe he miscalculated in terms of the resistance he was going to get. Mm-hmm. I believe he miscalculated in terms of what the world response was going to be, which he felt that he was going to get some support from some areas, which he didn't. And there's some interesting commentary about this. A lot of these dictators, especially ones who have been in place, have a tendency to have yes people around them.
Yep.
So I can very easily understand why you would not want to stand next to Vladimir Putin and say, this is a bad idea, sir. It's probably not something, you know, that you're going to do.
No.
So he probably had a lot of people around him that say, yes, sir, we can do this. Yes. And
well, it seems like he's sorely that always leads how much people would want to be back in the USSR, too. Like, I think that he thought that he would be, you know, kind of welcomed with open arms, like, oh, good, Mother Russia's, you know, taking us back under her wing. And, well, when you've been independent for, what, 30 years now? I mean, if he would have tried something like this maybe back in the mid-90s, when there were probably still a lot of supporters of the USSR, it might have gone a lot different. But, you know, time passes, people change, and it's not looking like it's going well for them.
No, it isn't.
Unfortunate for both sides.
That's the thing. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that there are some people there who probably do want Russia back, but you got to let these people in these regions make that determination for themselves. You know, anytime you have to force your way into a situation, it's probably something that you shouldn't be doing. Mm-hmm. Unless, here again, it's different if it's a defensive measure, but, you know, just to you know, claim territories based on what you feel is right is probably leading yourself up to exactly what's happening here. And like you say, the technology now can work against you because when people see tanks driving over cars, pretty, you know, willy nilly, the impression of what's happening there can really change.
I was going to say they blew up an apartment.
Yeah, they did. And they said that was a missile that wasn't theirs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you can't really trust that. But I'm just saying, like, people sitting back and, you know, watching this missile hit this building, you know, thinking, wow, that could be my building. And it really changes people's perspectives on these things.
Yeah. It did look to me like an errant strike, like it was something was wrong. Here again, I'm not defending the situation at all, but their explanation that it was an anti-air missile that had gone astray is possible. Okay, it didn't look like a targeted hit to me, but that's what happens. It wouldn't be happening in the first place if they weren't invading. So there's no getting around it. It's their fault.
Yep.
This is Vladimir, and I say there, but, you know, the Vladimir Putin and his government is at fault here. There's absolutely no getting around it. Some of the things that have been happening in Canada, which have been mirroring what's been happening in the United States to a lot of to a large degree. Is interesting to me because I don't know. This whole thing with the vaccines can be confusing, and I don't want to get too mired in that, but this is where it started. Now, the vast majority of the truckers in Canada, the way I understand this, and I know you know more about this than I do, have been vaccinated. Okay. But for the ones that feel they are being forced, this has become enough of an issue that they've had these drive-in situations where they come in with all these trucks and just park them, and they block large areas of cities and so forth. And I've had people in the United States who are feel that they don't like vaccines, but they feel that what's been going on in Canada is something that should not be allowed. And then there's the other ones, there's the anti-vaxxers who say, yeah, this is great. So it seems like there, you know, both sides of the issue here in the United States, whether you're pro-vax or anti-vax, are split, which is interesting to me because they don't rally into the corners based upon vaccines. They have a different opinion of what's happening up there. There's been some talk of this happening in Washington, you know, as far as the United States, some people that are planning on talking about this anyway, of it happening here in the United States. So anyway, let's start with Canada first. I believe that Canada has been more strict overall than the United States about vaccines, with the exceptions of New York and some other places. There's other places around the country like Florida who really have been very lenient in terms of vaccines. But as a whole, in Canada, for example, I would say overall, you know, they had the lockdowns and they had some other things going on. And then, of course, the vaccine mandates. How did the truckers get involved? Tell me a little bit about this.
Well, these truckers that, you know, made the headlines, who were out honking and getting the ire of all the people in Ottawa, were not part of the major trucking organization up in Canada. These were mostly independent contractors who, you know, did border crossings. They definitely chose a bad way to go about their cause. Because, you know, if you're out there disrupting people's lives, you know, for 3 weeks straight, honking your horns so people can't sleep, blocking businesses. In one case, they were trying to leech off of a homeless shelter that was, you know, meant for people who are actually homeless and need help. It's not going to bring a lot of people to your cause.
Right.
And I think that the government actually was a little bit too lenient at first. I mean, they let it go on for a long time before they started actually cracking down. And I feel like here in the United States, it would be a couple days and that would be it. Also, we're a lot more heavily armed down here, and I really don't feel like a trucker blockade in, you know, say, L.A., because they were talking about blocking the Super Bowl at one point, which would not be wise, because once again, like with the Russian oligarchs, that's messing with people's money, and that is never received well. And I feel like people down here would not have taken it as well as the people up in Canada. I mean, you probably would have seen a lot, because Americans aren't as nice as Canadians are. But I feel like, you know, when they finally did crack down on it, they were appropriate with the use of force. I mean, they weren't shooting people. They weren't. They were just mostly doing mass arrests and everything. My main thing with the whole protest is you saw what happened with the GoFundMe and Give, Send, Go, right?
Yeah. Who was it that shut it down?
It was the Canadian government.
Okay.
Basically said, Give, Send, or you can't be doing this, and they froze the assets, and then apparently, I guess, Give, Send, Go sent refunds back to everybody. At least that was the last I saw. But the thing is, there are a lot of people, you know, on the opposite side of the truckers down here who are, you know, applauding it and going, oh yeah, this is great, stick it to the truckers and everything. And once again, this is a constant theme that I've always had. Yeah, wait until it happens to you. You've got these, you know, these banking organizations and everything who, once again, are kind of deciding who's allowed to be on the free speech side, or they can just cut you off completely. That is another thing that's kind of worrying, and it's something that people on one side don't see about the other. I mean, wait until, you know, you have a cause or you have a protest and then you get cut off, because banks don't like people messing with their money. So I don't know, that's the main thing I want to bring up about that. It was kind of a dumb cause. I mean, honestly, but because, you know, yeah. I'm kind of on the pro-vax side. But, and if you don't want to get that shot, don't get the shot, but you're going to have to find somewhere else to work. I mean, that's just how it is. You can't just roll into an employer and, you know, dictate their rules to them. So,
yeah, that's what a lot of people don't understand. You know, employers, they get into some dicey situations there in terms of government reach versus the reach of the private sector. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a complicated subject. At this point, I would have to say I'm generally pro-vax too, but with the evidence that we now know, the science is kind of spoken here. Number one, the vaccine is most likely going to protect you when you take the vaccine, it's most likely going to protect you and only you. It won't prevent you from getting it. And I know a lot of people have played fast and loose with the truth on that. Yes, it's possible to still get COVID after you've been vaccinated. But the thing is, it's far less likely to be severe or far less likely to be lethal when you've had the vaccine. Not everybody, but let's just say a lot of people are in total agreement that the people who are having the hardest times in emergency rooms across the country are people who have not been vaccinated. Okay. So it really does just protect you. And I say that because not only does it not protect you from getting it, just prevents it from killing you for the most part. The other thing it does not do, it does not stop you from spreading it. So if you have the vaccine, you can still be carrying the disease and spread it. So really the vaccine does just protect you at this point. That's the way the science is speaking. With that being said, I feel that this point, this is something that we cannot hide in the basement for anymore. It is time to recognize the fact that this is something we are going to have to manage. This is something we are going to have to move forward with and deal with the best we can. And yes, people are going to fall victim to it. But we just can't have everyone hiding underground in bunkers indefinitely hiding from this thing. The time for that has passed. So with that being said, I believe that we have to protect the most vulnerable people in our society. And that's where I would show a little bit more sensitivity. There's people who have their immune system is compromised. They have other things going on. And when they're in public, if there's something you can do to make them feel more comfortable in terms of social distancing and so on and so forth, by all means, do it. You know, you don't have to, and not everything is a violation of your rights to show some consideration for another person.
People who aren't vaccinated too, the thing is they start, when it gets critical, like it has in the past few months, then they take up all these beds that are causing other people harm because they can't get into treatment on things. And so, I mean, that's absolutely why I really do think that it should be mandatory, because it creates a domino effect. I mean, you've got people getting
that's a point that's hard to argue. Sure.
So, it does protect only you, but I mean, it also indirectly does protect others in that aspect. I just wanted to chime in on that.
That's an absolutely valid point. That's an absolutely valid point, but I believe the crest of that hill, we've gone over it now. So this is the type of thing here where I know there's still going to be some controversy about mandates for vaccines and some other things, but on a practical level, to one degree or another, this is something we have to manage. And when I hear people say, well, you can't ignore it, nobody's suggesting that we ignore it.
No.
Okay, this is something that has to be carefully managed. We have to protect the vulnerable. And like you said, we have to keep an eye on this thing to make sure it doesn't overwhelm our health services. That's part of how we have to manage it. That's all part of the equation. No one's saying that these things aren't problems. But to suggest at this point that we need to be digging underground and the complete shutdown that we had 18 months ago, for that just to go on indefinitely, every time a new strain comes along, it just can't happen. We can't function that way, because as much as we don't want to get sick, we also have to eat. We also have to pay our bills. Mm-hmm. You know, there's things that have to be done in our society to live as well, or it causes other problems. You know, the impact of mental health.
Yeah,
well, with people being isolated, creatures. Other things. That's the social development of children.
is the social development of children, because I mean, missing a year or two of, you know, face-to-face social interaction, it's going to be very interesting to see what kind of impact that has on kids who are growing up right now. Like, I've seen it with my friend's kid who's been inside, and I mean, he's 7 years old, and really he only has, like, I think one friend. Whereas, you know, back when I was a kid, we had a whole group, you know, because we were allowed to run around the playground with each other and everything. And I just, I hope it doesn't emotionally damage. And I mean, it's having effect on adults too. I mean, I'm one of those rare exceptions of people who can go weeks without talking to people. But I mean, most people aren't like me. I mean, they need that social interaction. Yeah. I think that's why a lot of people have kind of gone kind of stir crazy. It's been a, you know, a giant case of cabin fever for most people.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But,
Well, I'm hoping that we're the like I said, the crest of the hill has been gone over, and time will tell. But like I said, this is something that I don't feel is going to go away, but it is something that moving forward is something that's going to be part of managing, like we do the flu and a lot of other contagious diseases. So anyway, interesting topics today. And I want to thank you, Jack, for coming on and talking to us about these things. I want to thank the audience for listening. Don't forget, you can find the Billy D's podcast pretty much anywhere podcasts are found. I want to say hi over to our friends over at Good Pods. That's a great app for independent creators. You can also find the Billy D's podcast on Apple Podcasts, formerly iTunes Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, on down the line. We're pretty much found anywhere podcasts are found. And you can also find me on the Twitter machine at Billy D's, and you can follow me there, and you can tweet me anytime if you have any suggestions, points, topics that you would like us to cover. By all means, you can tweet us right there on Twitter. And also too, about the Twitter account, there's a link in my Twitter bio that pretty much has links to everywhere that the show is found on the internet. So, Jack, closing words.
Just be careful the hills that you want to die on. I think a lot of people have lost sight on that. Things that you wish on other people will come back on you should you become the minority.
Absolutely.
I was going to say, I'm reachable at JackCasey8542, which I will start posting more on.
Okay, very good. Yeah, you should. And you probably should try out Spaces. That's another conversation for another time. But Spaces is something that you might be actually quite interested in. All right, Billy D's right here with you. Thank you very much for listening to our podcast. And we will talk to you again next week.
Well, hello everyone. I am Billy D's from the self-titled Billy D's podcast. You can find me on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, and many more of the best podcast networks. Join me for my commentary and interviews. Follow me on Twitter, real easy to find, at Billy D's. I am Billy D's. I'd love to have you listen in.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.